Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Cesar Romero.
Welcome to the Ivy Podcast, the podcast for leaders, innovators, and entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Cesar Romero, and today we're going to talk about how to cultivate a culture of mindfulness in the workplace with Catalina Lasso, Marketing Director at Search Inside Yourself Leadership Institute. If you are someone that struggles with cultivating more mindfulness and fulfillment in the workplace, then this episode is especially for you. Catalina is originally from Colombia, and she cares deeply about personal and professional growth. As a marketer with over 14 years of experience, she has worked with companies of all sizes to elevate their brands and growth. As someone passionate about personal development, she practices and teaches ways for anyone to grow and attain their full potential. She has worked as a marketing professional in companies that include CGS Communications, Telemundo, American Express, and most recently, she worked as product marketing manager at Google for 7 years. In 2018, she joined the Search Inside Yourself Leadership Institute as a marketing director and currently leads the organization's efforts to grow reach and impact across marketing channels. Additionally, Catalina is a certified Search Inside Yourself teacher and a certified meditation facilitator. She's also the author of the book Plenitude and the creator of Plenitude.net, serving the Spanish-speaking community interested in mindfulness and personal growth. She currently lives in San Francisco and enjoys oil painting, writing, and traveling. I'm definitely excited for this episode, especially as someone that is constantly trying to cultivate more mindfulness and fulfillment, not just at work, but in my personal life.
And before we get into our conversation, I have a huge favor to ask. Please go to iTunes and leave us a review for the podcast. Just search for Ivy Podcast or click the link in the show notes. It will really help us grow our show and get this in front of as many listeners as possible, like yourself. Thank you so much, and let's dive right into the show.
Catalina, thank you so much for joining us on the Ivy Podcast. It's such a pleasure to have you on the show, and I'm excited to dive deeper into marketing and personal development.
Yeah, hello, Cesar. It's a pleasure for me to be here with all of you today, and thanks for the invitation.
Absolutely. To kick us off, walk us through your background and what you're currently doing now at Search Inside Yourself Leadership Institute and what falls under your responsibilities.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, I'm the marketing director at the Search Inside Yourself Leadership Institute. The short name for it is SILI. Yes, silly. It's okay to call it SILI. And this is an organization, it's a nonprofit, and the program was originally born within Google. So it was the mindfulness-based emotional intelligence and compassionate leadership program born at Google that eventually they did a spin-off and it became an independent nonprofit. So my role is to help amplify the organization's impact, to make sure we can reach out to more people around the world, and to, yeah, get more people to try our programs that many people call transformational.
I love that. You know, in a world where it's so, you know, we're connected by technology, but starving for that connection. I think the work of SILI is so important. So I want to personally thank you for doing that. And let's dive into that. Like, how did you end up at SILI? Right? What were some of the key milestones that happened throughout your path that led you to SILI?
Oh yes, it was definitely an interesting ride. And I'll say it continues to be an interesting ride. So just to share a little bit more about my life, my history, I was born and raised in Bogota, in Colombia, and moved to the US when I was about 17, just because I wanted to learn English. And so the idea was that I would only be in the US for a few months to learn English, and then I would go back and continue with my life there. But I was able to get an offer for a scholarship to go to college in the US, which was also a big dream of mine back then.
Yeah.
And I felt that it was a sign for me to stay. So I ended up staying and went to college in Maryland, did international business. And then right after that, I started working in media and entertainment. I worked at Telemundo and a radio station in the Washington, DC area. And then after that, I decided to go to New York City for my MBA. So I went to NYU and specialized in finance and marketing. So everything was just very like business oriented, this big desire to accomplish big things, to work hard and keep on going. And, you know, I had a very long list of things that I wanted to attain in my life. And it was this process of like, okay, you go to college, then check that. Okay, done. Next thing, you get your master's, done. Next thing, you work in a big organization. I started working at American Express in the World Financial Center in Manhattan. Check. Then what else is out there? Well, technology. So I started working at Google. And then I moved to Silicon Valley. Check. Next thing, got married. Yes. And then I always share this. I got to a point when I was like, wait a second, what is all of this? Who came up with this list of items that I need to check? Mm-hmm. And who am I? And why am I doing this? And what am I after, right? Because it was this hamster wheel of like, keep on doing. And I'm not gonna lie, part of me is very appreciative for this woman, this teenager who moved to a new country and had to work really hard and face all the issues as an immigrant that I had to face and accomplish so much. But then part of me also realized that I wanted to do more being and less doing, right? So really prioritize my own being. And I unfortunately experienced a very difficult episode of burnout at work, while also experiencing or going through a divorce at home. And as an immigrant, I didn't have too many people in my network where I was living. And so I was alone trying to figure out my personal life and my work life. And it all boiled down into a very difficult time for me. So much so, Cesar, that I decided to leave my job temporarily. So for 6 months, I went to travel on my own. I went to travel to discover myself, to search inside myself, as I often say.
Yeah.
And it was in this journey that I, you know, I went to live in a monastery and an ashram in India. I lived in Italy. And a lot of people joke about how my story is so similar to the book Eat, Pray, Love. then I went to Africa. And can you continue to look for clues and signs? And like, I was trying to find the meaning of happiness and how to be happy myself, even though I had abundance in my life and I had checked all of those boxes, but there was something, there was emptiness within me. So after that very long trip, I came back to Google and I decided to become certified to teach the Search Inside Yourself program. And then after that, I was the CEO of the Search Inside Yourself Leadership Institute, the nonprofit, reached out to me saying that they were looking for someone to lead marketing in the institute. And it was a sign for me to say, all right, it's time for me to leave the corporate life and transition into something that is better aligned with my higher purpose. And
I love that. What an incredible journey.
Yeah, so that's kind of what I share in my book, Plenitude, which we can also talk about. But yeah, that was the long story of how I got to where I am today in terms of, my journey professionally.
I love that. And a couple of things I would love to unpack there, because there's a lot of people out there that feel the same in terms of having a checklist and following that checklist, going to a particular college, following a particular career path, getting married, having kids. Not to say that those things are wrong, but ultimately, you need to discover what's going to fulfill you. What recommendations would you have for people going through that right now, but might not necessarily have that aha moment or even the courage? Because it takes courage, because you could be aware of things, but you might be afraid of, losing that stability, right? So what would you recommend to people out there that might be going through the same?
Yeah, 100%. First is recognizing that wherever you are is probably where you need to be. And there is a reason why you're there, right? And there was a reason why I went through all of that in order to then realize my higher purpose at the right moment. So recognition that you're probably in the right place. A recognition too, or an invitation to start to have a little bit more clarity around what is it that moves you. And the phrase that I like to use for that is use joy as your compass. And usually, sometimes we tend to talk about passion, find your passion and go after it. And often passion may not be as accessible to everybody. And some people may be quite passionate about something and may work in something different. Some people are passionate about a ton of different things. And some people have no idea what their passion is or not yet. And so I think using joy as your compass is a little bit more accessible, because that's something that you can do every hour of your day, every moment, right? It's not this grandiose passion, big thing, but it's like, okay, I am going to follow my enthusiasm. What moves me little by little? Today, I have curiosity over this particular book. I'll read it. I have curiosity, I'm going to take this one class. I am being kind of pulled into this direction to have a coffee chat with this one person. I don't know, something about their life interests me. Great, go and have that conversation. So it's about taking steps slowly, right? One after the other, one after the other. The image I have is when you're crossing a river and you kind of step on one stone after the other. And then all of a sudden you look back and you're like, whoa, that was a lot. That was a long journey. All of a sudden you're on the other side of the river and you realize you're in the right place. So that's just one tip on how to start gaining alignment and clarity on what it is that moves you, that calls you. But you're absolutely right that it requires courage. And I'll tell you, it was very difficult for me to make the decision to leave a company like Google.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of friends who would tell me, are you crazy? Do you know how many people want to be in your shoes? How can you leave a company with such stability and all the benefits they provide and career growth potential and all of that for a small nonprofit? Like, it's not as stable. And yeah, I thought about it and I did my pros and cons little list. But the truth is that within me, I had already made the decision because I wanted to have greater impact on a topic that moved me, which is making sure that more workplaces increase their attention to well-being and human-centered skills. I just, it moves me deeply to see how many people there are out there who go through their days with frustration, overwhelm, anxiety. And we spend so many hours at work, whether it's at home or in an office, but so many hours, we need to be thriving. We can't just spend more hours in this languishing and frustration state. So I wanted to spend more time and dedicate my own talents and my own days and my own hours to that cause. And so I would ask that question to other people, or that invitation of how do you want to use your talent? How do you want to use your gifts? What is that cause that moves you? And start moving toward that slowly, gradually.
I love that. And yeah, following your passion, it's a flow advice. I might rather use the joy as a compass, right? Like kind of like Marie Kondo.
Yeah.
Does this spark joy? Because if it doesn't, then that's a sign that it's not going to fulfill you, right? And since you brought up the workplace, I wanted to shift gears there and talk about, throughout your work, what are some of the challenges or things that get in the way for team leaders, managers, executives to foster a place where you can practice more mindfulness, avoid burnout? What are some of the things that that are a big challenge in the workplace now?
There are so many things that get in our way. Because I do think that it's natural for human beings to care for each other. We are natural empaths, and we want an environment that fosters connection. So what gets in the way is probably the it. And there's this framework that talks about how in teams, you have the we, the team, the I, the individual part of the group, and then the it, meaning the work, the projects, the deadlines, right? And they're all equally important, right? So it's not that we're just going to get together and talk and connect and not get things done. Absolutely not. But often it's just those demands, unachievable deadlines or milestones or goals, and this constant desire for more and more and more. And so last quarter we grew 15%. Well, this quarter has to be 20, and next quarter 35. And wait a second, what resources do we have to grow at that level? Well, it doesn't matter. You just gotta get it done, and then run and run. And then this internal desire to not let other people down, and like, sure, I can do it, and I don't know how, but let me do it. And I want more, and I want a promotion, and I want more budget for my team, and I want more recognition. And so it may be one of the challenges that I may find is just this ongoing just drive to get more and get more. And I'll say, of course, part of it is real important. We need to be ambitious. We need to deliver results. We need to drive change. We need to pay the bills in our organizations, absolutely. But how can that be realistic so that we can manage well-being? Because the truth is, if our teams are not well, then they're not going to be productive. And we just know that. And we know the millions of dollars that anxiety and stress and burnout can cost in terms of healthcare costs and lack of productivity, absenteeism, turnover, you name it. And so I think it's historical. We have had this image that we go to work and we're our professional selves and we get things done and we're productive and we go home and then we're our personal selves. And you're not allowed to bring your personal life to work. And we are producing here. We're not here to connect or to bring up stuff that is not related to the profession. And I think that's changing. And I'm really glad to see that new generations are changing that and are demanding that we change that as well. And so prioritizing it, really trying to prioritize it proactively, because some of us are not wired for that. So how can you be more conscious of what you're not doing and proactively make changes? I'll share, when I was at Google, one of the teams in human resources conducted a study. Perhaps some of you have heard about it. It's called Project Aristotle. And it was, it had the intention of identifying the ingredients that make for an effective team, right? So if we think about it, like, okay, what are the ingredients? What are the drivers of high performing teams? And that's a great question. Like, yeah, what is it? Is it diversity? Is it the leader? Is it the project? Is it the number of people on the team? Seriously, what is it? And what they found was that the number one dynamic that led to teams being effective is psychological safety. Psychological safety, right? The ability for people to be themselves without fear of retaliation, without fear of being laughed at, without fear of being bullied, without fear of being shut down in a way, right? So bring it, being able to bring your voice and to be yourself 100% at work. That is what can help to generate a high performing team. And so now there are a lot of data points that help us understand, oh, wait a second, that human side that we've been kind of hiding is really important, and we need to get it out and we need to prioritize it.
Yeah, I've definitely experienced psychological safety, and it makes a big difference in my performance, right? When I feel like I can be myself, I feel safe to try new things. And if they don't work out, if I fail, at least I get to learn and continue growing. But I've also been in environments where they say there's psychological safety, but you don't feel it, right? You feel like it's the opposite. So it definitely makes a difference. And speaking of psychological safety, now that we are in a remote environment, right? Some places are hybrid, but for the most part, we're remote. What would you recommend to teams and executives that want to foster that psychological safety, you know, want to foster mindfulness, introspection in a remote setting, right? Because I think that there's a bit of a challenge there because we're not in the same physical space. What would you recommend there?
Absolutely. Yeah. And when we are working in remote environments, we have to be even more proactive and overcompensate for the time that we're not sharing in person. And so over communication and finding ways that the teams can do that. For example, in our organization, and because we teach all of this, we love experimenting within our own team, so we use it as a lab. And we shared a spreadsheet that invited people in the team to share their preferred method of communication because we were working remotely, right? And so it had three columns. The first one is, if I have a long request for you, do you prefer me to schedule a meeting with you? Do you prefer me to send you an email? Or do you prefer me to just Slack it or share it via chat? If I have a very quick question, can I text you? Like your personal phone, is that okay? And then each person said, yeah, these are my three preferences. And then whenever you had a question, you would say, okay, this person loves SMS. All right, let me text them. What's up? FaceTime, whatever it is. And so that was interesting because, one, we all have different preferences, and it was beautiful to be able to honor those preferences and also to get stuff done quicker, depending on what each person prefers, right?
Yeah. So
over-communicating, there's also this unspoken something that happens when you don't have in-person communication. So, for example, you finish a presentation, and in real life, you would finish the meeting and you would walk together, maybe to get to water or get some coffee, or walk to the next meeting. And in those extra minutes after hanging up or after finishing the meeting, you would have time to connect and to say, hey, that was great. Or, hey, I still have a question. That part was not clear. You don't have that when you have video conferences or simply meetings over the phone. You hung up and you're like, I hope that went well, like what's there? And so over communicating and sending a quick chat message saying, hey, that was great. Or I have a question, can I follow up with you? Or recognition for something that was well done. So over communicating is important. And trying to schedule time for I call it play and informal chat, not just work, so that people can bring a little bit more about who they are and what's going on through their lives. And in our organization, we do it in two ways. The first one is in many meetings, not all of them because this takes time, but in many meetings, we check in and we say, today I am arriving, blah, blah, blah. And so today I'm arriving a little frazzled because my kid got sick last night and I'm so worried. Or today I'm just super hungry because I didn't have a chance to have breakfast. Today I'm great and I'm super excited about this topic. And each person gets to share where they're at. And it's so simple, yet it's so powerful, because when you name something, you feel seen. It's like, oh, people can recognize that right now I'm not okay 100%, or that I am great. And there's something about that type of share that can be quite powerful. And the other thing we do is we schedule, and I think it's every other week, a time to share where you're not allowed to talk about work. And so you show up and you say, you know, I just signed up for an online baking class. Oh, that's cool. Tell us more. And oh, this weekend I'm going to go on a hike. And, you know, you just share a little bit more about you as a person and not just the work, the project, the deliverable and the deadline.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, definitely being more intentional about creating those spaces, right? And to the first point on communication, I've recently stumbled upon exercises like that, where even at my current company, we have a profile for each teammate on their communication style, right? Like exactly what you mentioned. And I think that's been, for me, it's been opened up a new perspective on how to be a more effective teammate and communicator remotely, because you basically adjust based on your teammates or your manager's communication style, right? So I think that's, I'm so happy that you mentioned that, because it's, I think we should do it more, especially if we're going to be remote. Now, Catalina, I wanted to make sure that we shifted towards your experience with marketing and growth, because I know some people in the audience are interested in that. And I want to make sure that we share with them, right? Like throughout your career, what are some of the lessons that you've learned when it comes to helping companies with marketing, growth, customer acquisition, right? Like what are some of the fundamentals that should be put in place to achieve, right, a successful customer growth strategy?
Yeah, growth is such an important word to me. I think of myself as someone who helps people, individuals grow with personal development, and then businesses and brands grow with marketing. And so when it comes to branding and customer acquisition marketing, which is really what I've done most of my life, people might know this already, but I think it's worth repeating. It's customer first. It's really getting to understand who your audience is and also who they're not. And often, and this happens a lot with startups who, you know, develop something brand new and you get so excited about it. You're like, yeah, this is for everybody. My product is going to help millions of people and everyone is part of our target audience. And it may not be just like that. I'm exaggerating, of course, but yeah, you have this big plan and you want to reach a very large number of people. And something I've learned is just the importance of narrowing it down and really getting to the audience that will benefit from your product. And really, once you do that, really understanding who they are, their needs, their preferences, their behaviors, where do they shop? Where do they get information? How do they feel? Why would they benefit from your product or service? Not why, as in, well, because it's going to solve X need, but at a deeper kind of values level, why, what is it doing for them, right? Mm-hmm. And so really getting to understand your audience, I would say, is number one, and everything else follows. And I've been doing marketing for a very long time, and channels have changed. So I'll tell you, I worked in radio and television. I worked at American Express in the direct marketing team. So yeah, direct mail, sorry, direct mail. So the mail you get at home with credit card offers.
Yeah, that was you?
That was me. For a short period of time, for you, small businesses.
You got me.
I gotcha. And so channels change, and now we're, you know, thinking about how to do it on TikTok, and tomorrow we'll be thinking about doing it with augmented reality, and who knows what's coming next. But what will never change is that core understanding of your audience. And here's where I mix things, right? Like using empathy to understand your audience and to serve them communications that can truly help them and add value. And many people think that marketing is, you know, like those annoying ads or the direct mail pieces. But the truth is that it's about connecting someone with a specific need to a solution. But first you need to understand that someone and their need, and then you can figure out the best way to connect them with a solution. So that's the first thing that comes to mind when I think of customer acquisition marketing.
Yeah, and that's one of the biggest fundamentals, right? And I've been in startups for the past 10 years, and I cannot tell you how it's one of the most common mistakes that startups make, not honing in on who that customer is, who that member is, and really figuring it out what the needs are, what the pain points are. Because most of the time, they are in a time crunch to put something out there or reach the point where they're making money. So everything is rushed. But when everything is rushed, you end up doing double or triple the work, right? Because you didn't take the time to really do that research and hone in on, okay, who is the ideal member?
Right. So it's not about creating something and then pushing it on people. It's about understanding a need and then solving for it. So a little bit of a different approach that I also know many, many companies do very well.
Yeah, absolutely. Awesome. Well, thanks for sharing that. And I wanted to shift now to your book, Plenitude. You know, I understand it's your first published book. It became a number one bestseller on Amazon. And I wanted to ask you about it. Like, why did you decide to write a book and why around the topic? Let's start off like in your own words. You know, what does plenitude mean to you?
It's a word that is very difficult to translate for anyone who speaks Spanish and is listening now. You may get that meaning, that profound meaning of the word plenitude. I'm translating it as flourishing, as in human flourishing. And the reason why this topic is important to me is because of that journey that I mentioned about my path to find happiness. And when I was on that path, I realized that happiness has this connotation of euphoria, laughter, high energy, right? And that's absolutely amazing. And we all want to have those moments of high energy and smiles and feeling great, right? But I realized that I was looking for something a little bit more stable, something that could stay with me in the ups and downs of life, and something more profound. And I found that flourishing or plenitude was the answer to what I was looking for. And so I define it as this state of fulfillment, joy, and well-being that comes from within. So it's not related to external environment or external stimuli or anything like that. It comes from within. And so I've done so much research about it because I became fascinated with this topic. And so, yeah, I've attended lots of seminars and courses and I've gotten certifications and I've read books and I've listened to podcasts about this topic. And it all started to make sense to me. Mm-hmm. And then one day I was drawing and I found the answer to it, which was seven principles, seven mm-hmm. practices. And they're actually seven mindfulness-based practices that can allow you to cultivate the state of flourishing. It's not that you attain it or that you have it or not. It's about cultivating it. Mm. It's a choice, it's a decision. And it's not something radical and very difficult to attain. It's something that you cultivate every hour, every day, and you start to get there. And so once I had those seven principles, I became very excited. And so I started writing a blog post and I launched my own website and started writing articles about it. And then when the pandemic started and I had more time at home and we were faced with this completely unfamiliar and uncertain time that COVID-19 brought to all of us, I asked myself the question, how can I help? How mm-hmm. can I contribute in mm-hmm. this time? What is my legacy in this new decade? Right? Because this is going to go down in history, right? As something huge for humankind. And what can I do? And the answer that came to me was share the seven principles of plenitude, of flourishing. And so I did. And I started writing. And then 9 months later, I finished it and I self-published it. And of course, I had to learn the process of self-publishing because I didn't know anything about writing books. And I shared that because if anyone else out there is interested in doing something like that, just do it. It's doable. I think now we have more tools that allow us to share our voices in different ways and share yours. So
I love that story. I love that. And it ties into what you mentioned at the beginning of the episode on how you were following that curiosity, you know, and things that brought you joy. And you start doing the research, and then one thing led to another one, wrote the book. You join Adam's group, book author, and you decided to put it out there. And it's an inspiration to all women out there, especially Latinas, that have a story to tell, right? Because that's the whole point, right? On putting your story out there and inspiring as many people as possible, right? So what are some of these skills or techniques that you teach to put some of these principles into practice, or all of the principles into practice?
Yeah, for sure. Let's talk about that. And before I do that, I just want to appreciate what you just shared. And once again, I also second that. And I invite everybody to share your voice and to tell your story. And part of doing that is also recognizing your own story as a leader. Mm. And everyone's a leader, by the way, and your own hardship. I didn't know when I was going through a very, very difficult time in my life that would become a book, and that mm-hmm. my story would allow me to connect with hundreds of people and to inspire them in a way. And so if right now you're going through something difficult, just know that maybe it will be a catalyst for you to inspire others, for you to connect with others who may be experiencing the same thing, for you to become more empathetic, and for you to potentially change other people's lives. And so that's part of storytelling. And it's so beautiful when you can see it from that kind of zoomed out perspective. In terms of the principles, there are seven, as I mentioned, and so I'll just name them quickly. And if there's one that you're interested in, we can go into it. So the first one is pausing, taking a pause, stopping, taking time to allocate a space for you, for your own introspection and reflection. The second one is presence, being able to be present, the here and now that so many people talk about. The third one is compassion, connection, self-love, right? So everything related to loving others and loving yourself. The fourth one is perspective, how to gain new perspective into whatever you're going through. What is your mindset every day? And how to use gratitude as a tool for perspective. Then we have purpose, which I would say is probably my favorite one. And I've talked about higher purpose and how to find it and how to align yourself with it. And then we also have curiosity from the sense of innocence, the ability to open up your mind and your heart to the present moment and to what is, and also how to use curiosity for your own self-knowledge, self-awareness, and as a tool of mindfulness. The definition of mindfulness is being aware of the present moment without judging it and with kindness and curiosity. And then the last one is allowing, how to surrender to what life is presenting to you. And that from that moment of surrendering, being able to make change. So it's not passive, it's actually full acceptance to have a baseline from where to start and how to, yeah, accept what happens in your life with more equanimity. And I talk a little bit about some of the lessons from Stoicism as well there.
I love that. And I highly recommend getting the book if you want to dive deeper into any of the principles or all the principles. I got the ebook for myself. But one of the ones that is always interesting to me is the first one that you mentioned, pause. Especially in this day and age where everything feels like go, go, go. You go from one thing to the next, whether it's a work project, at home. And it's such an underrated principle, right? Of just taking a pause to really check in with yourself. How are you doing? would be one of your, I guess, techniques for people to practice more pause?
Yeah, I see it as the foundation of everything else, right? Because if you don't stop to take care of yourself, to do introspection, to connect with your own self, then you can't really allow for the other principles to flourish. There are a lot of different ways you can stop, you can take a pause in your life. The first could be scheduling on your calendar. I follow my Google calendar on everything that I do every day, right? And so you can schedule 10 minutes. Look, even if it's 3 minutes, 3 minutes to look away from your screen, to go for a glass of water mindfully, right? Just like really trying to connect with yourself, really trying to take a moment to breathe. Lots of insights and theories around the importance of breathing. And that can be a very short one. It can be as short as taking 10 seconds before you send that email that you know you're going to regret, you know, when you get that email and you start typing and responding. And then you're about to press send and you take 10 seconds to think about it. You know, that's a pause that's real important too. It could also be a few days to do self-care. And I know that today with the pandemic, it's not as easy as it used to be to travel and to, you know, take vacation days as we used to, but let's rethink it. Even if it's a staycation, can you do that? Even if it's, if you like painting, do that. Gardening, do that. Working with wood, working with ceramics, like whatever it is, taking time to do something that nourishes you. It could be a long one, like a sabbatical, the one I did, where you fully disconnect from everything and you truly allocate time to find answers. You may not need that. And maybe a week of vacation is enough for you. For some other people, you may be going to a retreat. For some other people, it's quality time with their kids, going to a park. For other people, it may be time away from loved ones so you can focus on your personal project. It really depends on what you're looking for and what you need. Been really trying to connect with that need, understand what is it that I am looking for and what am I craving? What does my body and my soul, what do they need? And doing that, taking action. So something as short as stopping before sending an email, or before a conversation, all the way to months of disconnecting. So the old saying of unplugging so you can plug in with your own self.
Thanks for that, Karina. Yeah, it's so important to pause and recharge. And I try to be mindful about it, but sometimes things get in the way. But I'm aware of it, that every time that I pause, I'm just a better human after the pause. Like whether it's 30 minutes, 15 minutes, or you know, a weekend, it just allows me that space to be with myself, evaluate what I'm doing, if it's making sense or not, maybe things I'm missing out. So definitely make sure that you be more intentional about using pauses, because that's kind of, it's very underrated, right? But it can make a big difference. So to wrap it up, I know we've talked about your journey, personal development, marketing. But I wanted to ask you about, because I see your bookshelf. What are some of the, I guess, your favorite book that you have given people the most, or you know, the top three books that have had the most impact on you?
Ah, such a difficult question. I'll share one that helped me a lot personally. Mm-hmm. And that is the book by Kristen Neff called Self-Compassion. Mm. And he talks about, from a research perspective, she's a researcher in Texas. So from a research perspective, why self-compassion is so important for everybody. And maybe the reason why it was so important to me was because I used to think that I needed to be very disciplined and very strict with my own self in order to attain my goals, you know, like go-getter and trying to achieve so many things. And then I realized that you can attain so much more through self-compassion, through self-love. So that one I would recommend. And then from a business perspective, I really like Radical Candor.
Kim Scott.
With Kim Scott, exactly. About Kim Scott. And that framework on how to communicate, how to give feedback, it really helped me. And maybe it was, you know, I read it in a moment when I needed that kind of information, but I also would recommend it. And of course, I would recommend the book Plenitud if you speak Spanish, and coming soon in English as well. So if you would like to learn more, feel free to come to my website, plenitud.net.
Absolutely. Yeah, make sure to get Plenitud, because these principles, you know, whatever you're doing, whatever you're working on, they can enhance, right, or make your life better, right? So definitely recommend it. And thanks for those book recommendations. I'm a big fan of Kim Scott as well, and just being a better communicator. But Carolina, it's been such a pleasure to have you on the show and share with us your journey and been an inspiration to women out there, especially Latinas, that have a story to tell. And hopefully by listening to this episode, they can realize that, they should put it out there, right? And inspire more and more people, especially women, right? So thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you for this beautiful opportunity to connect with you and to connect with everyone who has been listening. Thank you so much for the invitation.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.